Well, greetings, greetings, and welcome to the show. This is Wrong Place, Right Crime. I'm your host, Frank Zaffiro, and we are in the middle of a retrospective series celebrating a grifter song. Now, what is a grifter song? If this is your first episode, then let me tell you, it is a novella anthology series, 35 episodes long, 35 installments, 30 different authors, follows Sam and Rachel, a pair of grifters who love each other and the con, and the rest of the world maybe not so much. Every episode takes place in a different location, is written by a different author, in a different style and voice, with a different con, and therefore the series has stayed very fresh throughout all 35 episodes. We are celebrating this series because it is coming to an end on October 1st, 2023, episode 35, Into the Dying Sun will drop, and that is the final episode of the series. So we're taking some time to look at every episode and talk to each author and just highlight what has turned out to be a tremendous collection of outstanding authors. In this episode, we're going to talk about Book 9, 10, and 11, Upgrade by Asa Maria Bradley, The Money Block by Holly West, and The Sound of Breaking Bones by Eric Buettner. All of these books, as well as the series, are published by Down and Out Books. You can find out more about them at downandoutbooks.com. They've been the home for A Grifter Song since the very beginning. So thanks for that and for sponsoring this podcast retrospective. Book 9, Upgrade, is written by Asa Maria Bradley. Now, I have been guilty of inviting my friends, both close and casual, to be in this series. The only additional stipulation, obviously, is that they are good writers, or even great ones. And Asa ticks both boxes. She's a talented writer and a good friend. But she is a little different than the previous authors in the previous 8 episodes. Her reading habits trend towards mystery, certainly, but she writes in the field of romance, specifically or more particularly in paranormal romance. Asa is from Sweden, although she's lived in the United States most of her adult life, so it should not be any surprise that the Vikings are part of her paranormal romance. Werewolves too. So if you like that sort of thing, you will not be disappointed. She's an outstanding author. Some of the books have a little bit of romantic heat to them, so be prepared for that. And she brought a little bit of those romantic sensibilities into this series. Now, Upgrade takes place in California, in the San Francisco area. The Upgrade piece has to do with computers and software, and I'll let you delve into the read to get the details there. But she has a little bit of a background there as well, so she knows of what she writes. And it's a great setup. It's a great con. I really enjoyed it. But what I enjoyed most about this episode was the dynamic between Sam and Rachel with regard to romance and jealousy. And this is really the first time in the series that that comes into play. And so she does an excellent job of exploring that. And that's not always the focus of a grifter story, but it is certainly in this case. And I think it's interesting because the love between Sam and Rachel is generally so unshakable that having a crack like this briefly occur, you know, is different. And that's what we're looking for. We're looking for differences to keep this fresh. And Asa certainly accomplishes that. She also introduces a character who is a computer whiz, a hacker extraordinaire. And this is a character that comes up multiple times throughout the remainder of the series. So you can watch for that as well. So there's your setup. Let's find out specifically what Asa has to say about her episode of A Grifter Song, Book 9, Upgrade. Well, let's dive right in and tell me, what was it that made you decide to accept the invitation to write an episode of A Grifter Song? Because it is a little bit outside your regular wheelhouse.
Yeah, and that, I think that was one of the reasons why I was really excited about the project. I mean, one was because we're friends. And so if you ask me to do something fun, I'm going to probably jump on it. Yeah, it was like a nice challenge. It was fun to write outside of my genre, and it was fun to play in somebody else's world. So I was pretty excited about it. And then there you had some really great writers already on board in the first season, and so it was fun to be part of the second season.
Well, now when you came up with the storyline for this, was this something that you came up fresh for the series, or was it the seeds of a story that you just didn't quite have a home for?
No, it was definitely fresh for the series. I mean, because I since I write usually paranormal romance and urban fantasy, it was, you know, a non-magical world with the people had no special powers, at least no special like paranormal powers. They have very special skills. And so, the whole heist aspect was really tempting to me. That was, and who Sam and Rachel were. So the story grew out of reading the sort of the series Bible on who they were as characters and what they were doing.
Now, that Bible that you mentioned had some guardrails in it, some boundary lines that you had to kind of play within. How was that for you? Did you enjoy that sort of structure? Was it difficult to operate within it? How did that affect you?
No, I actually found it like creatively inspiring, because the fact that there was a world already established and that the characters had, you know, some character traits that we needed to keep, that still gave us a lot of freedom. I mean, you set it up so that it still gave each author a lot of freedom in terms of playing with what were they already bringing from past episodes, and then what could we do to maybe not necessarily, I wasn't coming at it from necessarily developing them as characters, but looking at it in terms of developing their relationship. And that was really interesting, because if you read, you know, if you're writing a series and you're starting the series, then you know so much about their relationship of some characters, and then you're kind of growing the relationship. And so in a way of being like just getting a snapshot of their arc and sort of writing within that snapshot in a novella form, that was really fun, because I didn't have to do that pre-setup. That was already done for me, but I could still like deepen their relationship in a way and then contribute to a larger overarching story without having to do all the work. So, I mean, that was kind of fun.
Well, you took Sam and Rachel in a direction that not a lot of other participants did, and that is that you explored their romantic angle of their relationship. So could you touch on that?
Yeah. So, yeah, well, I'm a romance writer. I write paranormal romance and urban fantasy with very heavy romantic elements. And so if you give me two characters that are in a relationship, I'm always going to look at the romantic angle of that in terms of, we already knew that they were a couple and that they have been a couple for a long time. And so I was looking at like how long have they been together and living this life of being grifters? How does that influence their romance? Because part of being grifters means that they're going to have to charm whoever is their mark, right? And a lot of times you might do that by insinuating or having sexual relationships with the mark. And so also, of course, my romance is pretty sexy, so there was going to be sex on the page as well, which I remember I asked you about, like, can I put sex on the page? And you're like, sure. And then I don't think anybody else had asked you that question before, but so I was really interested in from Rachel's perspective. And I think that was also something that I really enjoyed, writing first person POV, which is not something I often do. So I mostly write in third, close third point of view. So I wrote it from Rachel's point of view, and she is the one that is romancing a mark. And then I kind of played on what their relationship has been before, in terms of maybe Sam being the one that was more involved romantically with older, richer women. But in this case, Rachel was actually romancing or charming, not somebody older, somebody that was actually close to their age, but richer and more powerful. And how would that impact the relationship with Sam? What kind of insecurities would that bring up, both in Rachel and in Sam? And would that make any cracks in their relationship? So I was looking very much at it from that point of view, which was fun. They're a very fun couple. I mean, you've created some really great characters. And then my background is in physics and IT. So I set the heist in Silicon Valley in the sort of IT, San Francisco Bay Area, Silicon Valley IT industry. And that was also fun playing with that world, which is something that I kind of know in terms of venture capitalists and the crazy money that goes around and the sort of legal heists that sometimes happens within startup companies and stuff. So it was a really fun project.
You can answer either of these questions or both. If you were going to end the series, how would you end it? And or how do you think it'll end?
Well, I'm a romance writer, so it has to end on a happily ever after, right? So
of course.
So I want Sam and Rachel to sort of ride off into the sunset together and live a happily ever after long life.
The title of the final episode is Into the Dying Sun. So
there you go. Yeah. But yeah, I don't know. Knowing you and knowing the genre, I'm hoping they're going to get to have a happy ending, but that I don't know that they are going to get one. That's the tension, right? When the final episode comes out, what are we going to see? What's going to be the end of Sam and Rachel? So I have riding into the sunset is like crossing my fingers that that's what's going to happen. But they do live a pretty risky lifestyle. So they'll have to do some growing and make some very hard decision if that's going to happen. We'll see.
October 1st, we will see. Well, also, what is your most recent release or what do you have coming out in the short term here that folks could check out or find out more about you?
So I have, I write paranormal romance, and my next release is going to be the third book in the Norse Warrior Protectors series, which is a paranormal romance with heavy on Norse mythology. And it's called Wolf Hunger. And that will be out. It's coming out in September.
It'll probably be out around about the time people are listening to this episode, if they are listening to it contemporaneously.
All right. So then, yeah, go get that one in KU. Since they're already reading Grifter's song in KU, let's just hop on into more romance.
And they can find out more about you at awesomemariabradley.com, correct?
Yep.
All right. Well, thank you for coming on and being part of this retrospective, Asa. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. And thanks for putting out a great series. It was a really fun project.
All right. There you are, folks. Asa Maria Bradley talking about Upgrade, book 9 of A Grifter Song. No doubt you can hear how smart she is. I should have warned you going into that interview. I mean, she teaches physics at the college, so... in addition to her fiction writing. A great friend of mine, outstanding writer, check her out. As is the case with the majority of these authors in A Grifter Song, another way to learn more about them is to search for their name on the podcast page. I've done much longer interviews with just about every single one of them, and a lot of cool tidbits come out in those interviews, and Asa's no exception. So check out Wrong Place, Right Crime, back catalog, I guess, previous episodes, and you'll find just about every single Grifter Song author there for you in a little bit longer form. All right, let's move on to book 10, The Money Block by Holly West. Now, if you don't know who Holly West is, let me tell you, she is the hub of the wheel at many conferences. People tend to be the spokes which rotate around her. She's very social, is involved in a lot of different aspects of different conferences, including editing anthologies and just kind of being the person everybody wants to hang out with, including me. But I first met her in St. Petersburg in 2018. at a dinner that I really had no business being at, but I was invited. That's a whole other story. And knowing what it was that she wrote, which she'll tell you about, but it isn't exactly in the same time period as Sam and Rachel, I thought, well, now there is someone that's going to have a very interesting take on this. And diversity is what I was looking for in every sense of the word, but most importantly in style. And so I approached her. Of course, she barely knew who I was, if at all, and was understandably reluctant at first. But she came around, thankfully, and you'll hear her tell how she came up with her story, which I like because, and I don't want to spoil what she's about to tell you, so I'll just say it takes an old con and puts it into the context of the present day, and she just did a great job with that. The thing about this story, though, that I personally like the most is what Rachel goes through. And a lot of that is spoiler, so I don't want to give any of that away. But it is something that sticks with Rachel and Sam, and it is something that comes up again in episode 35, Into the Dying Sun. And as a quick aside, I'm just going to apologize right now if during this podcast or future ones you hear my cat Pasta yelling. It's almost impossible to try to edit around that. So, and it's definitely impossible to get him to shut up. So, I'm told it's because he loves me. I'm not entirely convinced. You know, it's all in the tone, folks. But getting back to Holly and her episode, the money block, she definitely had an impact on the series with this episode, and it's one that a number of people cite as a personal favorite, other Grifter Song authors. So let's hear what Holly has to say about The Money Block, Book 10 of A Grifter Song.
All right, well, Holly West, we are here on the floor of VoucherCon. It's in panels and sessions, so it's a little quieter than some of the other interviews I've done here. But the first question I've been asking everybody is, when you were invited to join A Grifter Song, what made you say yes?
I think, actually, I think I told you this at the time when I saw the cover designs. you had sent me several of them, and I saw them, and I thought, wow, those are some pretty good covers. And I think I was also kind of in between projects, and so it just seemed like a challenge for me, and I was a little afraid to say yes. But I also knew if I said yes, I would deliver. So it was kind of like, do I want to make that commitment. That commitment, knowing that once I do, it's a done deal. So, yeah.
Well, now, I know the answer to this question, so I'm going to frame it a little bit differently. I usually ask what inspired your story or if it was something you already had in mind or whatever, but I know for a fact you did a little research on cons and you decided to riff on an old con.
Yeah, which is funny because now at this moment, I can't remember. It was like the money box scheme, I think, is the one it was based on. Basically, it's a concept of like a box that makes money. What was funny is because I don't think about cons or anything like that. I don't, you know, it's not like I have this wheelhouse of knowledge of cons. And so just I used, the internet and said, you know, what are some standard cons? And so there was a list of them, and I was thinking of the story that I had in mind, and the money box scheme seemed to fit it the best. And so that's what I landed on.
Yeah, you basically updated it to the digital age.
Exactly.
Now, you've written some other, a lot of other short stories, and you've written some novels as well. These are your own creations, your own world. For this, you had to play within some guidelines. Was that easy for you? Difficult? Did you like it? Hate it? How was that experience?
It was easy for me. I had, well, easy-ish. You know, nothing's easy when you're writing. But I got the series Bible from you, and I got, like, the parameters of who these characters were. And within that, I actually treated it the same way I would treat any new project. And I took what you told me and then created character profiles using your parameters, but also adding in like what their fatal flaw would be. And you know, I kind of created that for myself, and that helped me figure out the B story basically, and figure out like how because you have your external story, which is they want to con this dude and get the money, but you have your internal arc, which is the B story. And so I used my character profile that I created to create that, that's part of the story.
Which it would be a spoiler, so I won't say it, but it is a good B story. And as a little bit of a tease for those of you that will read the money block before you read the final episode, you'll see some correlation there. I'll just say that. So Sam and Rachel, you made these profiles of them. Was there anything about either of them or both of them that intrigued you, that you really liked, or that you really wanted to explore?
Like, one of the things about Sam and Rachel is that they talk about, or maybe even fantasize about, leaving the life, but both of them deep down know or suspect that they never will. And I was trying to create a scenario that would challenge, in this case, Rachel, that would change her circumstances to the point where suddenly it might not be tenable to keep this going. You had to really examine. I don't want to, give any spoilers or anything.
You're dancing around spoilers really, really well, actually.
Yeah. So basically create a scenario that would really challenge her and her ability to stay in the con.
Did you have a favorite moment in the story or a favorite passage that you wrote and were especially proud of or enjoyed doing?
I kind of, funny enough, the antagonist, although, we talked about this earlier, and it's like, Sam and Rachel are the antagonists, really. but my antagonist, I guess you could say, that the guy, the Mark, right, is also his own kind of antagonist. Uh-huh. And so I really loved creating that character. And at the time, I had been working out with a personal trainer at the gym. And a lot of times we'd be just chit-chatting as we're working out. And I would ask him questions. And I wouldn't say that the Mac Foley character is based on him, but he was kind of the inspiration. Like, what if my trainer had his own set of personal gyms, and what kind of life would he have? And some of the kids, he's kind of a bro type, and Mac is kind of ruthless, but also in a way, now I just thought of something, is I'm thinking now, it's like he actually had kind of the same challenge as Rachel. Uh-huh. They kind of had a parallel path, different, but also with kind of the same challenges, and what would you do?
Have you read any of the other episodes? And if you have, any of them jump out to you as personal favorites?
Yeah, I have read several of them, but the most recent ones are most fresh in my mind. So Curtis Ippolito's was the last one I just finished, and I really loved that. I thought it was a really tightly written story, and it was kind of because it takes place at a resort, so it's kind of like you kind of felt like you were on vacation too. And Curtis is really good at sense of place, because the place he was writing about is San Diego, his hometown.
Right.
And so he's really good at evoking the feelings of being in San Diego.
Yeah. Yeah, he did a great job of that.
And the other one that I loved was James D.F. Hanna's, which unfortunately I cannot think of the name of it. It was great, but I can't remember the title. And the title's actually really good.
Somewhere Outside Salvation?
Yes, that's it. That's it. I really like James's writing in general. And he brings kind of everything that you get from reading a James D.F. Hanna novel, he brings to his episode. And that in itself, for me personally, because I like his writing, I like his voice, I think he did a really good job. And I love the scenario that he came up with.
Yeah, the one of the wonderful things about this series for me has been how all of the different authors put their own mark on it in terms of the voice and their choice of place and scenario. And I would say his is one of the more unique of both the place and the characters.
Yeah.
Like that.
It was so James D.F. Hanna. It was like, I was talking earlier about a story he had written, and I knew it was his before I even knew it was his. So he's got a style, and I really respond to it. So yeah, I really like that one.
James D.F. Hanna is this final season, and Courtesy Politos is the penultimate episode, number 34. Number 35, Into the Dying Sun, will drop on October 1st. It's the end of the series, a series finale.
I can't believe it's over.
If I were to have turned the wheel over to you and said, take this baby home, how would you have chosen to end it? And I guess as a secondary question, how do you think it'll actually end?
Okay, well, I cannot say because it's spoilers on my episode. But my belief is that Rachel survives, and her story comes full circle, and Sam dies, and some of the questions that she was asking herself in my episode are no longer relevant.
So is that how you would end it, or how you think it'll end, or both?
I'm going to say both. Why not, right?
All right. Fair enough. We'll see if you are right on October 1st. Final question. You have written a number of other things, actually rather diverse things, as well as having done some editing on an Anthony Award-winning project. What is the newest thing, either out or coming out, and how can people learn more about Holly West?
Right now, actually, 2 days ago, the BoucherCon 2023 anthology, Killin' Time in San Diego, was released, and that was an anthology of 20 stories that I edited, and I'm super, super proud of it. And so that's my most recent work. As far as my own work is concerned, I have a short story in an anthology edited by Ron Phillips called Thicker Than Water. And but yeah, so that's my most recent short story, and that came out earlier in August.
And if people want to find out about this and more, where is the best place to go?
HollyWest.com.
Spelled like it sounds, folks. Well, Holly, you wrote a wonderful story and really contributed well to the mythology, but I wanted to say I'm really glad that you were part of this and this podcast as well.
Awesome. You know what? I can't wait to read the final one. I'm sad that it's ending, but I can't wait to read it.
All right, that was Holly West from the floor of the BoucherCon Mystery Conference. Sure, you could hear the vivacious personality there. You can see why people want to hang out with her at these conferences and elsewhere. And just, again, a fantastic job in adding to the mythology of A Grifter's Song with her episode, The Money Block. All right, let's move on to episode 11. The Sound of Breaking Bones by Eric Buettner. So once again, I am guilty of bringing in somebody to this series who is a friend of mine and B, someone who I collaborated with. I mean, I think basically all the authors I collaborated with are in this series. Eric and I wrote a series together called Bricks and Cam Jobs, featuring Bricks and Cam, who are a pair of hitmen. In the first book, The Backlist, they don't know each other, but they are kind of competing to keep their job with the mob, which is downsizing. And then in The Shortlist and The Getaway List, they are actually a team. I would call these action-oriented with some dark comedy thrown in sort of books. And in all three books, Eric definitely wins the funniest / grossest scene award. It's hands down. I can't even come close. I didn't even get the silver. I only got the bronze. That's how far away I was from matching him. Anyway, Eric writes a very clean, very fast-paced, usually action-oriented stuff in his McGraw series, his Lars Shane series. They're just fantastic. And he'll tell you a little bit about his most recent book. But I asked him to be part of season one, if I remember right, and he was just overwhelmed. And he's termed himself the boy who can't say no on occasion. When asked to participate in something, it's almost always a yes, which is a great thing for the person asking, but sometimes can be overwhelming for the person who says yes. He's always come through when I've asked, but this was the first time he had to say, well, no, which quickly became, well, not yet. Talk to me next season. And of course I did, checked in with him, and he was like, yeah, I'm up for it. I even got a title ready to go. I'm going to do it.
And so he wrote The Sound of Breaking Bones. And most of what I like about this is what I like about all of Eric's work. And I've already explained what that is. And his impact on the series will become clear in my interview with him. So I won't take up any more time talking about how fun and well-written this particular episode is. Let's just hear straight from Eric Beatner himself about episode 11 of A Grifter Song, The Sound of Breaking Bones.
All right. Hey, Eric, we are here on the floor of VoucherCon. We have Smart Alex about 20 feet away making fun of me as I do this interview. And
we're in the middle of an interview.
We have Tori Eldridge interrupting. Not very ninja-like, I have to say.
That's true. That was, wow. The worst ninja ever.
Yeah, no kidding. So you were part of the second season, and I know we have a friendship, but was there any other reason beyond that, that when you were asked to be involved in this, that you chose to do so?
Well, the minute you said grifters, I'm interested. And I thought the concept was so fascinating, and the idea of being able to get to play within that. You know, we all think that we have this potential to pull off a great grift, I think. But it's really a skill. So yeah. I think when, you know, posed with the chance to come up with a ruse and a grift of my own, you want to see if you can sort of implement mm-hmm. that and will this work? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, in the case of a lot of their grifts, how badly is it going to go?
Right. Well, speaking of which, you wrote the Sound of Breaking Bones. Was this a story that you started thinking about once you decided to be part of the project, or were there seeds of it that already existed?
No, it was a whole new thing. I will admit the title was hanging around. That was something that I had written down and said, oh, I got to use this somewhere. and it just seemed too good to pass up.
That's not uncommon for you, though, right? You do that a lot?
I make a lot of notes. Yeah, my notebooks look like the rantings of a crazy person. a lot of half-finished ideas, a lot of things that you're like, really? That was a good idea at 2 a.m.? Not so much. But when I sat down to, you know, embrace these characters, because I have done a couple things before writing characters that other people had developed, and you get the basics and the setup, you know, from the original creator, and then you gave us all, I think, great free rein to kind of run with it and make the characters a little bit our own, still play within the parameters right. of the world. So it was a lot of fun to try to come up with a plot that both built off the stories that came before, gave it a place to go from there, and stayed true to what had already been built on the foundation before me.
Was it difficult then at all to stay within the bounds of that rule book, or was that pretty easy for you?
No, I think it was pretty easy because the characters were well-defined. Where they had already been and what they'd already been through was well-established, and I think the kind of characters, obviously if you're inviting me into it, you know that these are the kind of people that I can write and I can relate to. So I think it wasn't too much of a stretch. It wasn't like me trying to all of a sudden, you know, write a sci-fi story that was completely out of my realm.
No, I didn't worry a whole lot about you missing the tone, that's for sure. So Sam and Rachel, was there anything about them that intrigued you or interested you or that you wanted to do differently with them?
I didn't want to rock the boat. I didn't want to reinvent the wheel that was working so well. I think, you know, the idea of a couple who makes their criminal activity intertwined with their relationship and their romantic relationship mm-hmm. is a really interesting place to explore. And obviously when things go badly for them, they can't just cut bait and run like a lot of, you know, other criminals might. They have made this commitment to each other to stick it out no matter how badly things go. And of course, you know me, my favorite thing to do is put characters through the mill and see how far down I can kick them before they can't get up again. So that part was really fun. Of course, you know, I was also coming off of, I think it was Holly's edition where they walk in on my story on page one limping and with injuries. So
right. Well, and you gave them a few of your own though, too. I mean, you are single-handedly responsible for the telltale limp that Sam carries through the rest of the series. I think you gave him the scar on his eye, too. I can't remember. Was there a favorite moment in your episode that you really enjoyed writing or that when you finished you were especially proud of?
Well, Well, it's interesting. I'm the father of two children. Both our kids we adopted. And it was the first time that I'd written about adoption in any form. So it was interesting to kind of explore that, because I'm always very sensitive of making sure that it's a truthful representation of that. Obviously, these were terrible people grifting, you know, innocent parents who had gone through the trauma of infertility, all stuff that, you know, I could relate to because my wife and I experienced that. So that part was actually an interesting exploration for me, to delve into this part of my own personal experience that I'd never written about before, and being able to do it in a obviously a very heightened way. But it was I don't want to say fun, but it was interesting to sort of plumb those depths.
Have you read any of the other episodes? And if you have, any of them jump out at you as personal favorites?
Oh, I'm not going to pick favorites. I mean, I'm behind because there's so freaking many of them, Frank. But I've literally really enjoyed all the ones that I've read. And I think it's such a fascinating thing. And it's got to be fascinating for you to sort of birth these characters into the world, hand them off to this wide array of other authors. I mean, you have such an incredible cross-section of other writers that you've trusted with these people and where the story's going to go. And obviously you're... have the responsibility of bookending it, you know. So you have to find a way to both unleash them and then put them back on the leash at the end. So brave on your part, but I love the novella form. I love how tight they are. I love how fast they all move. I love how they all advance the story a little bit, and yet you can dip in and read each as stand. Like, you know, I certainly haven't read everything in order. You know, going, but you can go from Holly's to Paul Garst to Curtis Ippolito's, and you're not missing the connective tissue between necessarily. You know, they're a little bit like, you know, maybe like the Parker novels in that way. You can dip in and out, and you still get the same satisfaction of, you know, the fun of the grift.
Yeah, and you bring up a great point in that one of the joys of this series for me is to see how people were so respectful of the characters, and yet at the same time put their own mark on the characters and the story. And so you make a great point. And you really had an impact on this series, obviously, with Sam's maiming.
I asked permission first.
You did.
Can I mess him up a little bit?
It was a purposeful maiming. Sam has only me to blame for giving permission. I probably know the answer to this because we've worked together a lot of times and I've read a lot of your work. But for those at home... If I handed the reins over to you, how would you end this series? And if you want to take a stab at it, how do you think it will actually end?
Oh, people aren't going to like it, but the tragic thing would be, of course, they both die. In truth, the more tragic thing, one of them dies, the other has to go on alone. I think that would be absolutely heartbreaking after everything they've been through and the way that they've stuck together with their own off-kilter moral code, but this bond that they have, this love that they have together, it does justify what they do in a weird way. So you do root for them as the outlaws, and it would be too tempting for me not to kill off one of them and let the other live out that tragedy and that loss for the rest of their lives. I don't think you're as cruel as I am, so I don't think you're going to do that.
You know, obviously I'm not going to tell you, but people can find out on October 1st when the Into the Dying Sun drops, episode 35. But you are a very prolific author. You've been called the hardest working man in crime fiction, and I think that's an earned title. What is your most recent work, either just out or just about to come out, and where can people find out more about Eric Buettner?
Well, my latest novel is called There and Back. That was out earlier this year, so that is it's getting great reviews. It's people are talking. I just signed a bunch down in the book room just now.
Awesome.
And then in February of next year, I have the start of a new series, a new trilogy. The first book, The Last Few Miles of Road, is what it's called.
Oh, it's a good title.
Yeah, thank you. And that'll be the first of, like I say, a three-book series. You know, first one's out in February, and then February of the next year, and February of the next year. in between that, I'll be writing a whole bunch of stuff and hopefully getting it out there, whether it's got my own name on it. I have to slap some pen names on it. Who knows?
And you do a little ghostwriting, too, although I know you can't talk about that.
Yeah, no, I've done some writing that doesn't have my name on it, and those are always fun to do. And again, playing in other worlds where characters are already established, and you have to sort of adapt your own style to doing that. Yeah. But I've realized now that I'm staring down this 3-book deal and I know sort of what my releases are going to be out into 2026, that I am not very good being idle. So that's too slow for me. So one way or the other, there will be more books in that interim. How those arrive, I'm not quite sure yet, but I think my agent is getting tired of me calling and saying, like, here's a list of pen names for the 4 novels that I already have finished. Can we just start to send those out?
Well, I want to tell you that I really enjoyed your episode, from a great title to a great story, and I appreciate you being part of this retrospective as well.
Oh, thanks for having me. I mean, I was proud to be a part of what has grown into a pretty monumental achievement, so congrats to you for shepherding this whole thing through to the end, and it's no small feat when you look back on it. That's a lot of words, a lot of people that you trusted to handle your people and who trusted you to do right by those releases. So I think that speaks well to how much people like you hanging out with you and working with you. I mean, the working relationship that we've had has been fantastic. So, and at this point, you've laughed me in being prolific. So I might be working harder, but you're making it look easier.
Well, in reference to the series and all those folks, it's been easy for me given the quality of the writers. Well, there you are, folks. Eric Beatner talking about The Sound of Breaking Bones, episode 11 of A Grifter Song. I had to cut off the end of the interview because he pranked me, asking me about a comment I supposedly made. Quotes around that, because it's nothing I ever said, but he was seeing if he could get me canceled by saying something inflammatory. That's what happens when you interview your friends. They try to mess with you. Anyway, so check out Eric's work, his new book, and of course the upcoming one that he mentioned as well. All right, so that will wrap it up for this episode. We talked about Upgrade by Asa Marie Bradley, The Money Block by Holly West, and The Sound of Breaking Bones by Eric Beatner. Next episode, we're going to hit books 12, 13, and 14. Still Life with Suitcase by Scott Eubanks, and then Down Comes the Night and The Reckoner, both of which I wrote. More on why they're back-to-back and so forth in the next episode. So thanks to Asa, Holly, and Eric for being interviewed for this. And thanks to you, the listener, for checking out this retrospective. We'll see you on the next episode, which, if you're listening in real time, will be tomorrow, where we will talk about those next 3 books. Until then, this is Frank Zaffiro reminding you that sometimes you got to be in the wrong place to write crime.